It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
They're looking for a point guard who's logged a lot of games in the NBA, who is going to run an offense that they trust when Jalen Brunson's on the bench and or if he gets hurt.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Would the Bills ever play another game in Canada, and could we expect that in the near future?
I wouldn't rule it out. Like, look, I think we want to really build this the right way and make sure we're here kind of inspiring that next generation of football fans. Got a new stadium to launch, and we're probably going to play most of our games there for in the short term at least. But long term, yeah, we'd absolutely consider it.
Bills and Sabres COO Pete Guelli, piece up at WBEN.com as well, talking about the future of Highmark Stadium hosting soccer events.
Yes.
Yeah. With the
Love
quote,
that.
Soccer is absolutely something we will zero in on. Brayton Wilson has that piece up at WBEN.com. We want that facility to be a multi-purpose stadium, and soccer is absolutely something we will zero in on. Josie Altidore talking about that as well. So, we'll see. The new stadium has got the potential to host the draft, potential to host the Winter Classic. Maybe not the Winter Classic, maybe just the Stadium Series.
Stadium Series, like an outdoor hockey.
Yes, the Winter Classic could be a problem because the Bills might have home games.
Yep.
And that might be hard to kind of bake in.
You want to do a Liverpool-Arsenal preseason game at the stadium?
Let's go. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR, 803-0550, our phone number 1-888-550-2550. Still kind of looking back at that Baltimore game. We'll talk with Joe Marino coming up bottom of the hour. He's got an All-22 review of the game. We'll talk about that with him on the linebackers, the safeties, what the Bills can do. Was it really as bad as it looked? Sometimes, you know, the defense gets gashed and they fix three fundamental things. Like, all right, mm-hmm. Same guys can actually perform a lot better. Different opponent this week, the Jets. Lots to consider. 803-0550, the phone number. We also relayed a story from Fox Sports. They quoted Khalil Shakir and Josh Palmer. Palmer on the sideline asking Shakir, when do we open this thing up? And Shakir said, late second half, you know, that we got 17. The idea that maybe early on in the game they were conservative or not opened up.
Yeah.
But I read that and thought Josh Palmer is aligned with a lot of us. Like, let's rip it. And he was a part of that as well.
Is he the one who ran? He ran the most impressive route of the day, didn't he? The over-the-top against Jair Alexander to the corner.
Yep. I've got a thought for you on Keon Coleman that I'm so... It's going to be so fun watching this, and what I mean by that is people, I don't know if people are going to yell about it. If he gets a bunch of yards, no one's going to care about separation scores, and that's legit.
Right.
The thing about Coleman, so when he got drafted, a lot of the draft analysts thought he's best used in the slot. He should be best used as a big slot. And talking about people over the years that have done that, have played that role, or can he grow to be something else? And I think that Coleman has the potential to be the best version of himself. Forget about where he lines up. He has the best version to be himself. Sorry, the opportunity to be the best version of himself as a receiver by playing with Josh Allen. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. It's maybe a little bit counterintuitive. Coleman plays for another team. Uh-huh. He might never get the ball because he doesn't get open early. He doesn't beat man coverage. He's not going to do that.
Right.
He can perform well against zone. And then what's the other thing he does? If my quarterback can buy me like two more seconds, I can really be good at getting open. He, multiple times in this game, was the trash man, the Allen looks for him. And not every receiver can get away with this. The Bills have their other complements, Shakir and Palmer, and we'll see if Elijah Moore and Curtis Samuel can kind of get in the mix here. But if Coleman spends the entire year, Joe, just catching balls in the scramble drill, can he go for 800 yards and 8 touchdowns? I want to say yes. A guy that might not get open in the traditional way, like, that's all right. We've paired him with a magician who needs someone to get open 7 seconds after the snap. And then the magician's going to put it in a spot, and that guy's going to go up and catch it off the roof of the building, and there's your first down, or there's your touchdown. It's not the traditional wide receiver one archetype, but it is very much useful in a Josh Allen offense. And the story that Allen wanted Coleman from the draft, or he's one of the guys he really liked, might have just been that. Might have just been, yeah, I can make it work with a lot of guys, but what I really need is the most reliable, most visible, and most vertical, I mean actually jumping in the air, guy for those kind of plays. So If you're looking for him to be a true number one perfect receiver, I don't think you ever have to even worry about that. What he did in the fourth quarter, I know the Ravens backed off. I know there's a lot of game script in there. But I still think the game could get to a spot where the pairing with Allen is the real key here, in a way that I know every quarterback in the league, every receiver in the league gets a glow up with Allen.
Mm-hmm.
I think Coleman might be really reliant on Allen, and it could be a really nice pair that work together.
That's all well and good. Can I make sure, though, he is the second or third read then on every single play? Because that looks good when 5-7 seconds after the play, and yeah, he's cutting across the field, and there he is, put it up high, and he goes and catches it. Can I stop running a fade route to him for the rest of time? Can I stop where the plan that there was one of these plays last year, I think, against the Ravens, where the planned play is Allen drops back to pass, Coleman contested catch. That's the play. Because that is your first look, is not an efficient play. But if it is going to be my 6 seconds into the play, Josh is scrambled out of the pocket, or pressure's collapsing around and ball's got to come out, if that's what his role is going to be, that is useful.
Yeah.
But I never want to see – I just don't want that to tempt them into what it tempted them into on that two-point conversion, which is, you know what I should do here? Plan A, boys. We're going right to Coleman.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to ever be plan A.
They're going to keep throwing him fades. They're going to keep giving them red zone because they're going to view those, aren't they, as low risk?
But they are. Low risk how?
It's not going to get turned over. You use the sideline and the defender. It's going to be incomplete or it's going to be a touchdown. And, you know, it protects Josh.
What about on a play where there is no next play? What if it's fourth and goal?
Well, I'm never going to like that.
Two-point conversions. Like, these are plays where it's not there. You don't have a next play.
Yeah, because there's
if I've got, I could just sneak it two plays later. So let's put it up to Coleman. That's fine. But in that spot where there is no next play, it's not an efficient play.
No, and it also, it's not quite a screen, but when you throw a fade to a tall receiver that can jump really high, you kind of do remove the magic of the quarterback. It's
a little bit.
You just got to have him make a throw here. It's not a particularly, you know, whatever. It's not a magic Josh Allen throw like we see a lot. Anyway, 803-0550, get some calls in here. Matt in Walk Hill. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how's it going, guys? First time, long time. I appreciate you guys.
Oh, thanks for calling.
Yep, no problem. I just wanted to, you guys brought up kickoffs a little while ago, and it made me think about the conversation you guys were having yesterday about the galaxy brain move of running the kickoff out for the Monday night game.
Yeah.
And I was watching the game, and when it landed, you know, in the end zone, I couldn't believe it that they did not just kick that thing through the back of the end zone. And I was just saying, if the coach didn't have the utmost confidence that he could kick that thing through the uprights, then they probably should have just kicked it out of bounds.
Out of bounds, yeah. And Ben Johnson said that. He said it was a mistake and that they should have kicked it out. Yeah, he admitted, yeah, he said we should have kicked it out of bounds.
Oh, okay. I didn't, because I was watching, trading 5 yards for a,
Matt, it's worth asking if the natural progression will mean more onside kicks. Because, all right, instead of the touchback, I'm going to kick it out of bounds. You get it at the 40. Well, for another 15 yards, I can take a crack at possession.
Right, you get a. It's only like, what, 7%? But give me my 7% lottery odds that it hits someone's leg and it bounces.
Right, because if all that the team I'm kicking it away to needs to do is get three, you know, whatever, one first down, and it's over, all right, I'll kick onside.
But to me, if I were Ben Johnson, that's what I would have done. Because I'm giving myself a shot at the ball, and if the return team jumps on it, 2 seconds aren't running off the clock. They shouldn't, at least.
Right.
You also have the home field clock operator. Maybe you trust him a little bit more, but 2 seconds shouldn't run off the clock if you just do that. I guess if you really got a sharp side on the other, it's Vikings, hey, O'Connell, if you get it clean, run backwards to kill the 2 seconds. I guess you are flirting with that a little bit.
A little bit.
If you have a bad onside kick and it bounces right to a smart player that he just like runs 5 yards backwards and kills four seconds. But that's what I would have done. I would have gone for the onside kick there.
803-0550. Speaking of smart players, like one thing, I don't know if Coleman, if they would have talked about this or addressed this, He ran out of bounds and then came back in and caught a two-point conversion. Saw a play this week where Christian McCaffrey ran out of bounds.
Yeah.
You see this?
Yes, I did.
And then he signaled to Purdy, do not throw to me.
Because Purdy looked like he was about to throw
to him. Yeah, right. Yeah. Like McCaffrey went out of bounds and then took himself out of the play knowing I'm no longer eligible. It's a loss of down. Right. It's a penalty. So,
Did you see what happened on that play? Purdy threw it to his tight end in the corner of the end zone. He caught it for a touchdown.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't know if he was ever going to go to McCaffrey, but McCaffrey had the presence of mind to say, like, not here. He put his arms like to the side, like incomplete. Brad in East Aurora. Thanks, Mark, for the phone call. Hey, Brad.
Super happy about the win. What a surreal win. That was awesome. I'm a firm believer a win's a win. I hate to nitpick, but here I am. So I think the Bills missed a huge opportunity on their second drive to go up 14-3 on the Ravens. I think that's our best chance to win against the Ravens, super unique team that can run the ball like nobody else. I also think this is a bad measuring stick for the Bills' defense. No other team runs the ball like that. Lamar's so special. Derrick Henry's so special. It's just, you know.
Yep.
Well, let's see what happens the rest of the season. You know, let's not say our defense is terrible after this week.
Sure.
The last thing is, there must have been a rule change about punts. That punt after one of the three and outs early in the game where it touched the Ravens player but wasn't a fumble. I was so pumped to see that after our bad offensive series, but it didn't come to the Bills.
No, that I believe has always been the rule, that if it touches the kicking team first,
yes,
then actually you've seen this for years probably. If you get down around the 5-yard line and it touches the kicking team, like if but they leave the ball there,
you pick it up.
What will the returner do?
You pick it up.
He'll pick it up and run. Sometimes you've even had touchdowns on that. Why? Because there's no threat of losing the fumble.
Right. As soon as it touches the kicking team,
so
you have the option of taking it back where it was touched.
Yeah, I think that rule's been around for a long time.
Okay. Additionally, two other points here. I'm glad you brought up. They had the ball. The second and one, third and one punt. They're up 7-3 with the ball, and that's where game script comes into everything. You go up 14-3, all of a sudden the Ravens are in chase it mode instead of you.
Right.
And that's where, you know, you could get mad. The Bills their defense is giving up points and points and points, and you want to play a low event game. But, you know, going up there, making a better couple decisions on second and third and one could have changed the entire course of the game. The one thing, I think it's a good debate, and there can be one of these two things are true scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Are the Ravens a good measuring stick for the Bills defense? Yes or no? In the season-long rankings, no. In what it's going to take to win the Super Bowl, yes. The measuring stick for the Bills,
right?
When we're in the drought, you don't measure yourself against the best teams because you're not one of them. Now you are. The best teams are your measuring stick. The Ravens, I'm sitting here telling you, I don't think the defense is as bad as it looked on Sunday night, but that's the team when they meet in January. I'm going to look at that game as the measuring stick.
Right.
So,
there's a bit of there. Well, even that, their defense isn't as bad as what it was against the Ravens. Isn't their defense whatever it is against the Ravens and the Chiefs?
Pretty much. Yes.
That is what it should be. What their defense is.
If they shut out the Dolphins and the Saints in back-to-back weeks, like, congratulations. That's great in league standards and in your statistics and your rankings.
Yeah.
That's great. But to borrow from golf, like, it's match play. That you have to beat them. So I think it's one of those two things can be true kind of things. I do view the Ravens as it kind of gets to the larger point about, hey, the Bills always give up 30 to the Chiefs in the playoffs. That's right. They don't give up 30 to every team. They give up 30 to them. So that's the measuring stick. That's why Brandon Bean's going out there and overhauling the defense, not because the defense looked decent against the other teams, but what did they look like against the Chiefs?
Yeah.
Not good enough.
And really, the caller asked, like, you know, other teams you might face. There are, like, three teams I see where it's not the Ravens, but you'd want to see if their run defense performed in these games, it would give you more confidence.
Eagles.
About a January matchup. It'd be the Eagles in Week 17. It might even be this week, like the two Jet games, okay. Breece Hall, like given and, how effective he looked right away. And then
the Falcons?
I was going to say, because of Bijan.
They have a good run game.
But that's really it. Like, I'm not worried about Kansas City for this. I'm not worried about Houston or Pittsburgh or Miami, certainly.
It's also, like, run defense versus pass defense. It's a great example to make here. We worry about the rankings on how good they are against the run or the pass in the regular season. You get to the game, Who cares? Right. Like if the Falcons find that they can pass against the Bills to Bijan and Bijan Robinson makes them look foolish in pass coverage, well, then who cares about the run defense? It's overall defense. So
yeah,
they could, I do not think they will look as bad as they looked maybe the rest of the season. But
right, who would do it to them?
Right.
Cincinnati, maybe.
Cincinnati throws for 480 yards again. Well, seriously, right. Burrow throws for 500 yards against them. Holy cow, that's terrifying. Cincinnati misses the playoffs. Well, who cares?
Yeah, right.
It's match play. So thanks for the phone call. I don't think you're wrong. I think it's kind of fun to live in this world where, you know, these super concentrated matchups are what matters. Bob in Syracuse is next up. Hey, Bob.
Hey, guys. Remember that game? I think it might have been 2008. Remember the McKelvin fumble game? You guys remember that game?
Yep. Oh, yes.
Remember? You know, one of the things I was thinking back to that game, what if the Bills had a quarterback that could do something like that to another team?
Yeah.
And now it's us, right? So it's just those are games that we lost. And now these are games that we're potentially winning moving forward. So that's a cool thing. Just want to talk about one thing with the matchup with the Jets. It's definitely not a smart move to look past this team. We know that they've given us a lot of problems, especially over the last 3 years at the peak of Allen's career. He's been decimated by some of those defensive fronts that the Jets have thrown at him. And even in the games that we won, Quinton Williams has given him a big problem. Some of the stunts that they do defensively, I remember he got hit on the blind side. The one game that we destroyed the Jets in New York, I was at that game, he got absolutely lit up by a corner blitz. I just think that the Bills are really going to have to be on their P's and Q's. And they're going to come after him because the book on Josh is you have to be able to pressure him. You have to be able to rattle him, get him off his feet, and do whatever you can to try to hit him. And that's exactly what they're going to do, and the Bills need to be ready for it. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thanks, Bob. I think about this matchup a lot, and the Robert Saleh Jets, they had pretty good defensive players. And they always played the Bills in an aggressive way. And this goes back to even when, Diggs is on the team as a number one receiver. They always played the Bills as if they did not fear anything that they did. Like, we're not afraid of anybody you have out there. Gabe Davis, we're not afraid of him. We're not afraid of Devin Singletary. We're not afraid of, I'm trying to think of all the years going back. And this version of this Bills team might be different with the way they can run the ball effectively. That Jets defense just gave up 4 touchdown passes to Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, maybe there's a transition going on there. Quinton Williams and Sauce Gardner are still good, but
their line was great. Like they sacked Rodgers 4 times. They pressured him a lot. Like there was a lot of Steelers had to get the ball out quick because the Jets defensive line looked very stout, but everything behind that defensive line did not look the same.
Yeah.
Like Gardner was it. Like everything else, it looked like Rodgers had a pretty easy time. If he had any time in the pocket, he had a pretty easy time picking that apart. Calvin Austin, too. Like not T. Higgins and Jamar Chase. Like that receiving core is not great. They also did get lucky where a ball like bounced from Metcalf to Jonnu Smith back to Metcalf to set them up for a game winning field goal.
I didn't see that. That's how that happened?
Oh, it was a fluke. The flukiest play ever set them up for the field goal.
I did not see that.
Yeah.
CJ in Buffalo. Hey, what's up, CJ?
Hey, guys. Hey, you guys had me thinking about some other things, but I'll leave it at my one question. So I was thinking, do you guys think we still need a wide receiver? And I say that because I think about how we used to think how hard the offense looked when we had Ken Dorsey here. And I'm not here to say it looks hard. I'm here to say it looks like it's still just all Josh Allen. And with that being said, I'll give the examples of, just like you said, match play. Think about last year in a regular season when we played the Chiefs. Josh Allen made it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry. Josh Allen made it happen. So when we got to the playoffs, Josh Allen couldn't make it. I'm saying, do you think we still need that guy?
Thanks. You're breaking up a little, CJ, but I think we got the idea.
I'm good letting this trio roll a little bit here. Palmer, I thought, looked pretty good in week one. Shakir, and you're not – like, Coleman did what he was supposed to in the fourth quarter. So I'm good letting that trio breathe for a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there's not really anybody you're going to add now that's going to make a difference.
You know, not over any of those three.
The receiver conversation was popping up in the first half and into the third quarter because it didn't seem like anybody could get open. I will – hold on, let me look at my crystal ball. Next year in the draft – shakes my crystal – I will be asking for receiver. Why? I'll tell you why.
New names on that board behind you.
I'll just tell you why. It's not that hard. It's a premium position. It's cheap to draft. Keon Coleman, if he pops off, will be a success story. Take one. Mm-hmm. Keon Coleman is about to, if he puts up 1,000 yards, outproduce his contract immensely. Meanwhile, I got Josh Palmer for $10 million a year. And Curtis Samuel for 9, and maybe Samuel's gone, and Elijah Moore for 2.5. And like, of course, next year I'm going to want to draft one. Doesn't mean they have to have a true number one. A lot of this conversation has been spun into that. I'll endlessly say it'd be better if they did, but they don't need one or they're going to die. They should keep drafting them, though. More. Draft more of them. Stop spending $22 million on three guys on street free agent deals and just draft a guy. It's super cheap. Because I think they can use their player development in a lot of different ways. So, but no, I think the group as it stands now shows promise, and there wouldn't even really be anybody to add right now.
No.
But you do – but it always kind of gets to the everybody eats. If Coleman develops into a – you want to throw it to him 10 times a game. I don't think that is a problem. I think that is probably a preferred outcome. To have someone that you have such a good connection with is ideal to
me.
So anyway,
the guy you would add is Moore Kincaid.
Yeah,
you would add Moore Kincaid. I got into this a little bit with Sal, but not much. He played 51% on Sunday in a game they were trailing. Your pass catching tight end wasn't on the field for half the snaps. 40% of their pass plays, he wasn't out there running routes. What's that about? He looked fine when he was out there. He caught a couple passes. The touchdown was really nice.
Nice touchdown catch.
He played less than Dawson Knox did.
And, of course, Jackson Hawes had a big play. Why do I keep saying Spencer Hawes? It didn't even make sense.
Were you listening when Nate said that on the
air? I don't even know why it happened.
Nate ruined it. He brought up some backup center from the NBA, and, like, now I do the same thing.
Yeah, there wasn't.
I keep wanting to say Spencer.
Yeah.
It's Jackson Hawes.
Yes.
Jackson Hawes. Well, we need to get him a nickname so we don't make this mistake anymore.
There's Jackson Hawes and there's Landon Jackson.
How about Ocho Cinco? It's available.
He is Ocho Cinco.
Yeah.
I need a bit of
Chad Johnson changed his name back, so I believe it is available.
It's available?
Yeah.
All right, we'll think about it. Joe Marino, the Locked On Bills podcast next, his All 22 review. Stay tuned for what we're going to talk about with the safeties. Joe saw some things from the safeties, linebackers as well, and where things went wrong for this Bills defense. 803-0550, Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
I want players who want to play. I don't want players who are oft injured. I want players who give a crap. And I really feel like, you know, since, you know, Thibodeau got here and Leon Rose got here, and I guess you could say World Wide West, that they've tried to bring in players who kind of mirrored that kind of thinking.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Naturally, early in the season, you're trying to get a feel of what's new in the next season, right? We just played an outstanding team, outstanding defense. They were very different than the last time we played them. And sometimes you can get caught up trying to figure that out. We had a couple three and outs that it's hard to get back into rhythm. In the second half, you started getting a feel of exactly kind of how the game's being played. Kind of have to kind of throw the ball at that point. We were kind of in a two-minute drill basically the whole second half and would have loved to be able to obviously get people more involved in the first half. Those two three and outs were something that was big that kept me up last night.
Joe Brady, Bills offensive coordinator on the game against Baltimore. We're going to get to Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills podcast and the Herd Mentality Substack as well. I want to make sure people know about that because Joe does some All-22 breakdowns, and you can take a look at what happened in the game, what went right, what went wrong, and he joins us on the Wester Hotline to chat about it. Joe, good morning. It's, of course, Jeremy and Joe. Happy Wednesday and Victory Wednesday, Joe. We don't get to talk until Wednesday on the air here, so I want to call it like a Victory Wednesday.
Well, I think after a win like that, it's going to be victory Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, yeah. Thursday. The team has to move on to the Jets, but we can still relish in that win.
That's sure. right. And you were actually there. You got a chance to go to this game, which you don't often get a chance to go to as many.
Yeah, it was super cool. Not very cool to have a flight delayed 28 hours, but the consequence of being stuck in Buffalo on Sunday and getting some tickets and being able to be there for that game was really, really special. I feel grateful to have been part of it, and probably my last game at Highmark, and so
wow.
What a heck of a way to say goodbye to a place that's brought me a lot of great memories.
That does qualify, I think, as riding off into the sunset with the with the stadium, I think, for you. It's tough to top.
Right. It's almost like I don't even want to go to another game.
Right.
That's it. I'm good.
So, Joe, you had a chance to dig into the All-22, and we'll talk a little bit about the Ravens and what the Bills can do better and maybe turn our eyes to the Jets at the end of the segment here. But let's talk about the defense and what you found. From watching what you put out there on the Herd Mentality Substack, I'm keyed in on the safeties, both Taylor Rapp and Cole Bishop in this game. You know, there's the highlighted play where Bishop gets thrown to the ground by Derrick Henry. People kind of looked at that one, but there's more than that. Maybe that's a tough ask for Bishop. What did you see out of the safeties in general looking back in this game and how much they maybe might need to improve?
Yeah, it was a rough go for the safeties, and I would say more so Taylor Rapp than Cole Bishop, which was pretty surprising. And, you know, it didn't feel like I was watching Taylor Rapp, to be honest with you. I think Taylor Rapp's a very good safety in terms of tackling and fitting the run, and he's an instinctive player, and he looked like a shell of himself in that game. And I do wonder, you know, as a player that has had a concussion each of the last two times he's played the Ravens, if that was weighing on his mind, because it just didn't feel like he was playing fast, physical, assertive, really just kind of some blunders that just make your head scratch. I mean, it's a run play, and he's dropped him back into single high deep coverage zone. I mean, it just didn't look like a guy that was ready to go and looked like he was really calculated and maybe at times in self-preservation mode against Derrick Henry and this Ravens offense. So, you know, I think Cole Bishop was objectively better than him in this game. And not that Cole Bishop played great, like, don't get me wrong, but Taylor Rapp really had his struggles, and it's wasn't the type of performance that we'd expect from Taylor Rapp. So I'm sure he's looking to bounce back. But, yeah, it was a rough go for those safeties, especially Rapp.
Safeties being the third level. Second level, linebackers, Bernard, Milano, when it comes to the same kind of stuff, like run fits, is that where things became the biggest problem for the Bills in stopping Derrick Henry?
Yeah, I honestly put a lot of this on the linebackers. I went into the watch expecting to be very disappointed with the defensive line, and I don't feel that way. I think there was some individual moments that, you know, needed to be better with the defensive line, but collectively the linebackers I thought were really the issue with the defense. Terrell Bernard and Matt Milano just didn't play fast. I felt like they're, you know, I think you probably heard a lot of commentary about Baltimore, and they're altering their cadence and their tempo and quick snapping a little bit to kind of throw off the Bills and their ability to communicate as a defense, but then also their ability to disguise, right? You want to show the offensive picture pre-snap that changes post-snap. And when that snap timing is really different all the time, it makes it hard to get into that rhythm. And so that's first and foremost, but I thought they were slow to process. I thought they were hesitant to trigger. They, you know, neither one of them are good take on players in terms of downhill and playing the run and playing off contact. But, you know, when you're not processing quick and that allows the blocks to get ahead of you, oh man, it was just a rough go. They just didn't feel it well. They didn't play well. There's just no way around it. Those guys didn't play well. It's probably the worst performance I've seen from Bernard and Milano. And so the front wasn't amazing, but it was fine. And I thought that the linebackers were the biggest issue with that defense on Sunday night.
Was it any different, a little add-on to that, when Dorian Williams would come in and they were in base? Did that make any difference to you when you saw their run defense?
There were some good moments. And one thing I will say about the Bills' run defense is that, you know, we talk a lot about them presenting light boxes. They really didn't. In fact, the Bills were, and pull my notes here, the Bills were eighth lowest of any team in week one in presenting light boxes, and that's not where they live. They're usually top five in presenting light boxes, and they played three linebackers on 33% of snaps. You're talking about a third of snaps, you have three linebackers in the game. And I thought it was better at times when Dorian Williams was on the field. He gives you that player that's better equipped to play into the line of scrimmage and take on blocks, and he had some good physical run fills. But you know, it's the other guy's got to play too. And 58 and 8 just weren't up to it. They didn't meet this moment. So it didn't really matter so much that they made those adjustments. Those guys didn't play well enough to do their job and be secure. And I do think that there is something to, and I know that this is not okay. The Bills gave up like 10 runs of 10 yards or more. And if you put those aside collectively, the rest was decent. But you can't be giving up 10 runs or 10 yards or more. I mean, a lot of that did come in chunks, but there were a lot of chunks. So, the linebackers got to be better. There's no doubt about it.
Joe, we had a caller last segment, I think, saying, I don't think Baltimore is exactly a good standard for this Bills defense. And
right.
What I said was, I think that's probably right season long. But the way this game went, if they do meet in January – will you be concerned about the matchup again? We hear a lot that it's a bad matchup for the Bills. Is there a reason to you table the concern for now, but bring it back when they meet again?
Well, I think that's just the way that it is. Look, every style of football, whether it's the way the Bills play or any team, there's going to be advantages to the way that you play. There's going to be disadvantages to the way that you play. Nothing is going to always be great against every team. And this Baltimore team, which is a unicorn in some ways with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry and what they're able to get done. It just exposes the worst parts of the way the Bills choose to play defense. And, you know, even when you're not even talking about light boxes, right, they kind of corrected that. You still saw the issues. They prioritize matchup style linebackers that thrive playing in space. The most important thing to the Bills is playing in space and defending the pass. And so you have these smaller linebackers that are not very good players being downhill and physical and playing into the line of scrimmage, and against Baltimore, it's going to expose the worst parts of your choices structurally for how you play defense. And so you even can kind of couple that with kind of some of the choices that defensive tackle, even though Ed Oliver was unbelievable in the game, you know, they don't necessarily have this deep pool of guys that are super firm, steady anchors against the run that's going to really own their space. And so it's just a tough matchup. And I think that's why, and you go back to the playoff game last year, the Bills were happy to just let the game play out, let Baltimore make these mistakes and get out of there with a win. And I think that they wanted to embrace that to an extent on Sunday night, but things, obviously, you're down two scores before you can blink after you go three and out twice on offense. And it's like, well, you gotta go get it or else you're just going to get smoked. And obviously a lot went right for the Bills to pull that off, but it's just a very, very challenging matchup for the Bills on defense. I think the encouraging thing is that the Bills' offense looked as good as it ever has against Baltimore. So if you got to go score points, at least you showed that you can do it. But I think it's just always going to be a challenging game for Buffalo based on the way the Bills play defense against that Ravens offense.
What changed for the Bills' offense? Because early in the game, they punt a couple times, a couple three and outs, looked like they were struggling to find answers down the field. And then, of course, in the fourth quarter, Josh Allen throws for 250 yards. So how much of it was that the Bills changed their approach? How much was it Baltimore kind of – did they play softer? Why was it such a tale of two halves, or three quarters and then the fourth?
I do think that there is something to be said for Baltimore and the game script and them playing defense with a lead, right, and them kind of being willing to not be as aggressive with how they played, and the Bills obviously were more aggressive with how they played. So it was a good mix. But I think that more than anything, Josh Allen put on a masterpiece. I mean, the guy took over the football game. He became unstoppable. He willed it. He made miracle plays. Just unbelievable, mature quarterbacking with how he manipulated the pocket and how he just approached everything. You know, you've seen Josh in games like this in the past, week one against a big-time opponent, showcase game, and, you know, he can chase some plays and, you know, maybe feel like he wants to put on a show. But even when the Bills were down, I thought he just continued to make great decisions and really do what was necessary to play this game in a way that gave him a chance to win it. And you can find yourself probably in a game like that chasing it a little, and Josh never did. He took the right opportunities with the football, even when they were down. And I thought that's really what happened. Josh Allen took over the football game, and they made a couple plays on defense that gave him a chance.
There was some social media debate yesterday on how impressive Coleman's performance was. When you saw what he did, mostly in the fourth quarter, how much credit do you think he should get for the stat line that he put up and the plays he made?
He should get a ton of credit. And the conversation on social media, I think, is rooted in separation metrics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And earned separation versus, you know, created separation. I don't think that's important. Keon Coleman's never going to be a dynamic separator. That's not who he is. That's not who he's ever been. But there is a way for him to be effective in this offense, and I think we saw exactly that, where he's able to make good plays on the ball and elevate and play above the rim. And when things break down, Josh Allen can find him. And, boy, there's been so much good with that piece of it. And the scramble drill, you saw, of course, against the Ravens on Sunday night. But even when he came back from injury last year, he made some big plays in the scramble drill against Detroit and even the Jets game as well. So that piece is coming on nicely. And you know, I think you've seen teams willing to kind of give him some one-on-one opportunities, and Keon's able to work back downstem and to the football and find some space, right? I think there's been like a mental improvement from Keon Coleman to feel coverage and get himself into some good spots. And so, no, he's not leaving guys in a blender with route running. He's never going to do that. But that doesn't mean he can't find space, get open, make plays, and present a meaningful target for Josh Allen. I think you saw the best of what he can mean for this Bills offense on Sunday night.
I want to get you on Jackson Hawes before we let you go, because I know you've got a lot to say about the Bills rookie tight end.
My goodness. This guy's quickly going to become one of my favorites. Obviously, I think the standout to anybody who watched the game was the 29-yard reception on the seam shot where, you know, it's a double catch and he concentrates and hangs on to it. I mean, it's the guy's first target in the NFL as a guy that's billed as a blocking tight end. It's an unbelievable play. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought it was Kincaid. I was there at the game. And I was like, that's an unbelievable play by Kincaid. And I get home and I'm like, when was this 29-yard catch from Jackson Hawes? And I had this moment where I'm like, oh, my God, that was Jackson Hawes. But it's the blocking. Oh, he's pissing people off, let me tell you. The way that he's getting after people. I mean, obviously, the technique, right, it's the controlled aggression combined with plus technique that makes Jackson Hawes this lethal blocker. He is moving bodies. He is collapsing the entire side of the line of scrimmage to set up James Cook cutback opportunities. He is going to be an X factor in so many ways that aren't going to show up on a box score. And so it's the effectiveness, but then it's the tone-setting nature. You saw he was under the skin of so many Ravens defensive players, and so – it's nice to have that identity piece for, you know, the physical type of offense the Bills want to deploy. And it's game one, but I'm excited for watching Jackson Hawes for a long time to come.
Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills podcast and the Herd Mentality Substack. Go to Substack, you know, search it. Herd Mentality Substack, lots of great stuff. The All 22 is always very valuable. On to the Jets, Joe. So brief thought on them. Is this a better opportunity to try and show that the defense can kind of get things together, or should Bills fans be a little concerned about that run game?
Well, I've been calling it the dollar store version of the Ravens, you know, so they're going to get challenged in similar ways. Physical offensive line, dual threat quarterback, dynamic receiver in Garrett Wilson. That's somewhat similar to Zay Flowers. They got some, you know, they got a big bruising back in Braylon Allen. Of course, he's not Derrick Henry. They have a speedy guy in Breece Hall, you know, that's somewhat like Justice Hill. So, yeah, I think you have some parallels to structurally what these offenses can be. And, you know, I think it's good to get them back-to-back. I hate getting both of them early in the season. That was on my wish list of things I didn't want, was Baltimore and the Jets early in the season, because they are unique opponents that you want to get some tape on, especially the Jets, right? Everything's new there, and you're trying to get a feel for what they want to be and how they're going to use everything. But I think getting them back-to-back is helpful where, I mean, come on, if you're a front seven player, if you're a linebacker, you're rapping Bishop. I mean, you're under the microscope. You got to quickly get it together. And I think if you're those guys, I think you should want this. And I'm excited for the Bills to hopefully show some growth week over week with that defense.
Very good. Thanks, Joe. Always a pleasure.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. Subscribe to that Locked On Bills channel, the Herd Mentality Substack. The All-22 was great to watch as he's laying all that out. You can check that out. When we get back, more of your phone calls. And I have maybe my favorite stat from week one that might lead to a new pool or a new game. I'll explain. That's next.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
They're looking for a point guard who's logged a lot of games in the NBA, who is going to run an offense that they trust when Jalen Brunson's on the bench and or if he gets hurt.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, very quick instant trivia. It could have been a stat of the day. It could also be instant trivia. We're going to do a little bit of both. Name the three quarterbacks that did not scramble in week one. Three quarterbacks did not scramble, and it will lead to a follow-up stat that is my new favorite stat. Yeah, get in here, Owen. Three quarterbacks did not scramble in week one. Who are they?
Tua.
Wrong.
Oh, he scrambled.
Hmm.
Daniel Jones, because he didn't have to.
Not correct.
Okay.
He had two rushing touchdowns,
too. Yeah, he ran two in.
Daniel Jones is a runner.
That wouldn't be a scramble.
Well, whatever. He did.
I just figured that the Dolphins wouldn't come near him. He could just throw from a clean pocket single play.
Any
just
rushing play from a quarterback we're talking about? Escaping
Stafford. Stafford is correct.
Of course.
Yes. That's what you're looking for is the guys that refuse to scramble.
Right.
Doesn't mean they didn't leave the it means you ran on a pass play.
Did Rodgers?
He did not. Rodgers. Rodgers, Stafford, and one more.
Is there another old guy?
Some Flacco. Flacco scrambled.
Flacco ran for...
Crazy.
Probably running for his life more than trying to get anything done.
Brock Purdy?
No. Purdy's a runner. This is a little tougher to get, but it's Goff.
Goff makes sense.
But anyway,
he doesn't run.
This is my favorite stat. This came from Timo Risk of PFF. Last year, Stafford's first scramble of the year was week 12.
Oh, man. What's his,
that's awesome.
What's his rushing line? And if you're looking
right,
at
like we should start looking
at for the season.
We should be looping in Stafford under rushing yards every single week.
I had a buddy that did this like 5 years ago, where he would bet over half a yard for Matt Ryan every week.
Yeah,
and like it would never hit. Like, why do you keep doing this? Because I just need one play, and then he'd lose it on kneel downs. That's why
Stafford's. They probably don't even put it on the board.
Right.
Right, because you might get a four-yard scramble for him, and if he kneels twice.
Could you imagine his line is negative?
It really
half a
should
yard.
Be negative a half a yard.
it deserves
like
to
in
be.
Any game they're favored, it should be. Absolutely.
I'm going
to
check.
Like how many rushing yards did he have last year?
We got to remember to do this tomorrow. We just have to bet Stafford under on rushing yards.
He had 41 rushing yards last year.
Stafford? Okay. Week 12?
And I bet there was one 20-yard run where there was just a giant hole for him to run.
No, through. I know why. He had 30 carries. You said he didn't scramble to week 12?
Yeah.
40, those are all QB sneak yards, I bet.
Okay.
Mm. I bet those are all QB sneak yards.
Yep.
This year, 4 carries minus 2 yards.
Rams, the Rams are at the Titans. Can I get rushing yards yet? Not yet. We're on that this week.
We're on it. We'll get there.
Allen went under his rushing total on Sunday because of kneel downs.
That's tough.
He lost 5 yards on 2 kneel downs.
I know, because
he was going backwards to get to it wasn't just a kneel down. He wanted to get Prater likes the left side, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. So he went back 3 yards to do that, and he went under his rushing total.
I got like 4 buddies that lost parlays on those kneel downs.
Well, let me tell you, speaking of parlays, I haven't said this yet. During the week, I told you, 2 Henry touchdowns, 2 Allen touchdowns. I thought about betting it Thursday Friday. I had a big bonus balance in my fan. I'm like, well, I just put it all in Henry and Allen.
I thought you did do that.
Each to have 2 touchdowns. I didn't until Sunday. I thought, you know what? I looked at that so many times. If that happens and I don't bet it, I'm going to
be mad.
And I put a sizable bet on Henry 2, Allen 2.
Yeah.
And that hit.
Yeah.
And it hit in a way where Jackson Haas catches the ball at the 1.
Oh.
It's Allen time, baby. Allen sneaks and doesn't get it.
Right.
Uh-oh. It's James Cook time. Doesn't get it.
Yep.
We're back to Allen. Got it.
Love those moments.
Yep. Oh, my God. What a ride.
It's the best.
What a ride. So, yeah, that was nice.
Yeah, that's a nice payoff there.
It was my career best win.
That comeback won me some money, too. I had a few parlays that needed them to win.
The comeback lost me a ton of fantasy matchups because that game exploded on points, and I didn't have enough people in it. Anyway, I had Allen in some leagues. All right, when we get back, they did something on ESPN today, and Chris Trapasso has something up as well, which is called basically like Spot the Lie. And I like this. We might want to do it every week. Spot the Lie. What game from week one was the outcome least indicative of what will happen going forward? Spot the lie from week one. We'll go through those, get some more of your phone calls, 803-0550 to join us on WGR.
It's Boomer and Geo, mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.